picture this. You're sitting on your couch, you've got a cup of coffee, and you decide it's finally time to open a new savings account.
Oh, yeah. The perfect productive weekend morning.
Exactly. So you download the bank's app, you type in your details, you snap a quick photo of your ID, and then, you know, the app asks you to take a selfie.
Right. Just to make sure you're actually there.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it even asks you to blink or smile just to prove you're a real living person. And then, boom, within 3 minutes, you're done. Account open.
It really is like a miracle of modern convenience. I mean, we have completely removed the friction of having to physically walk into a bank branch, you know, fill out paperwork, hand your ID to a teller.
But what if I told you that the phone you supposedly just used to open that account, well, it doesn't actually exist?
Wow. Yeah, that's a wild thought.
Right. What if the physical location the app registered was entirely fabricated? And what if that live, smiling selfie never actually passed through a real camera lens at all?
Which sounds like science fiction, but it's happening right now.
It is. Because according to a truly eye-opening piece of research we're deep diving into today from FinCrime Intelligence, it's a reality. The article is called Emulators in FinCrime: How Virtual Devices Are Industrializing Fraud.
And it is a fascinating read.
It really is. And our mission today is to unpack how criminals are taking completely legitimate software developer tools and weaponizing them. I mean, they are industrializing fraud at this massive scale and forcing financial institutions to completely rewire how they verify that you are actually you. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
We are essentially talking about software that pretends to be hardware. Right?
Yeah.
Which sounds simple, but the implications are huge. So what are the actual mechanics of an emulator in this context?
Yeah. So to understand the mechanics, we really have to look at the problem developers face every single day, which is device fragmentation.
Right. Because there are so many different phones out there.
Exactly. If you're a software team building a mobile banking app, you need that app to work flawlessly on the newest iPhone, a Samsung Galaxy from 4 years ago, a Google Pixel, and just dozens of other hardware variations.
And you can't just go out and buy 1,000 physical phones for your team.
No, buying thousands of physical phones just to test your code is frankly financially and logistically impossible. So the tech industry created emulators.
Okay.
These are tools like Android's native virtual devices or testing frameworks like Appium, and they're essential, completely legitimate tools that allow developers to spin up a virtual phone directly on their laptop.
Okay, wait. So the software is essentially like hallucinating a physical device.
Hallucinating a device. That is a great way to put it. The emulator perfectly simulates the screen resolution, the battery level, the network connection, the GPS location, even incoming phone calls.
Wow.
Yeah. So to the banking app that's being tested, it genuinely believes it's running on a physical piece of glass and metal.
Which, I guess, brings us to the core vulnerability highlighted in this FinCrime Intelligence report. Mm-hmm. Because this is a classic dual-use technology, right?
Oh, absolutely.
A tool that was built to make software safer and more reliable is now just incredibly useful for organized crime. And it seems to stem from a massive shift in how banking operates today.
Right, because of that convenience we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Because you and I demand that seamless couch onboarding experience, financial institutions have heavily adopted remote app-based account opening. But doing that creates this massive technical asymmetry.
And that technical asymmetry is the crux of the entire issue. See, in the physical world, trust is established through physical presence. The bank teller sees you, they, you know, touch the plastic of your ID, they watch you physically sign a document.
Right, you're standing right there.
Exactly. But in the digital world, that physical verification is completely replaced by data feeds. The bank's servers basically have to blindly trust that the telemetry data coming from the app is authentic.
They just have to assume it's real.
Yeah. They have to assume the device sending the data is a real piece of hardware in a real person's hand.
Okay, so basically an emulator is like a digital Hollywood soundstage.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like the bank's app thinks it's shooting on location inside a physical phone in London, but it's actually just sitting on a green screen on a server somewhere in a remote data center, completely controlled by the director.
What's fascinating here is that this Hollywood soundstage concept, it's no longer just a niche headache for like IT security teams analyzing mobile apps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The regulatory bodies are heavily involved now. The European Banking Authority, the EBA, and the National Institute of Standards and Technology in the U.S., NIST, They now view emulator abuse as a massive anti-money laundering and operational resilience threat.
Because it just completely shatters the illusion of trust.
Exactly. It fundamentally attacks the trust assumptions that hold the entire digital economy together.
Because, I mean, if you can fake the phone and the location, you can basically bypass the entire security checkpoint. But if criminals are building these digital sound stages to spoof devices, they're obviously doing it for a specific reason. And the report points out that this acts as a massive force multiplier for a few specific types of fraud, primarily synthetic identity fraud and account takeovers.
Yeah, let's look at how the Federal Reserve defines synthetic identities, because this isn't just stealing your wallet.
Right. It's more complex than that.
A lot more complex. Criminals take pieces of real information, like, say, your actual social security number, and they combine them with a fictitious name and a fake address.
To create, like, a Frankenstein identity.
Exactly. A Frankenstein identity that doesn't actually belong to a real human being at all.
And historically, monetizing those fake identities was a huge bottleneck, right?
Right.
You had to manually apply for credit cards, maybe manage a dozen physical burner phones on a desk.
Oh, yeah. It was incredibly labor-intensive.
But with an emulator, operators can just fully automate mass account creation.
That's the game changer. They just write a script. And the script spins up a virtual phone, applies for an account using that synthetic identity, tears the virtual phone down, and then spins up a completely new one.
With a different fake location and a different device profile.
Yep. And then it applies again, over and over.
Which explains the staggering scale of this. I mean, there are statistics in the text that actually made my jaw drop.
The IBM numbers.
Yes. The IBM Trusteer team documented a specific retail bank attack where just 15 emulated devices, I mean, just 15 virtual phones running on a server, managed to access over 6,000 end-user accounts.
It's unbelievable.
And they reported on another emulator farm that was mimicking over 16,000 compromised customer phones. So they aren't just opening new fake accounts, they're doing mass account takeovers.
And account takeovers are particularly devastating here, because if a criminal buys your login credentials on the dark web, they still have to actually log in.
Right.
Usually a bank security system will flag a login if it suddenly comes from, you know, an unrecognized laptop in a foreign country.
Sure, you get that text message asking if it's really you.
Exactly. But if the criminal uses an emulator to perfectly mimic the exact hardware model of your specific phone, and they spoof the GPS to match your actual home IP address.
The bank system is just completely blind to the threat.
Completely blind. It just sees you logging in from your normal phone at your normal house.
Okay, wait, I have to push back on this a little bit.
Sure.
Because if I log into my banking app on a new device, or say if I try to wire a large amount of money, my app doesn't just ask for a password.
Right, once more.
Yeah, it makes me do a live biometric check. It opens the camera, makes me put my face in that little oval, and asks me to turn my head or blink. So how does a fake virtual phone on a server get past a live active biometric check? It doesn't even have a physical camera, let alone a face to point it at.
This is where we get into a highly sophisticated technique called digital injection. And it really relies on understanding how apps talk to hardware.
Okay, how so?
Well, when a banking app needs to verify you, it sends an API call, like a request, to the phone's operating system. It's essentially saying, hey, turn on the physical camera and stream the video feedback to me.
Right, that makes sense.
But remember, the emulator controls the entire simulated environment. It sits directly between the app and the non-existent hardware.
Oh, I see. So when the app asks for the camera feed, the emulator intercepts that request.
Yes. The emulator intercepts the command, and instead of routing it to a physical camera sensor, it injects a pre-recorded video or an AI-generated deepfake directly into the data stream.
Wow.
So the banking app receives a perfectly formatted video feed of a face blinking and smiling, completely unaware that the feed was injected at the software layer rather than captured by a physical lens.
That is deeply unsettling. I mean, the app thinks it's watching a live feed, but it's actually just being spoon-fed a deepfake file.
And it gets worse.
Oh, great.
The FinCrime Intelligence Report highlights this chilling real-world example of this from the Amsterdam District Court just in June 2026. A 34-year-old man used deepfakes and manipulated biometric images to completely bypass ABN AMRO's verification process.
Oh, my God.
He successfully opened 47 different bank accounts in other people's names.
Just by feeding the app fake videos.
Yep. The mechanics of that Amsterdam case are incredibly revealing because he wasn't just like holding up a photo of someone to a real camera on a desk. He was actively injecting manipulated media into the onboarding flow.
And what did he do with 47 fake accounts?
Once they were open, he used them as a vast network to facilitate further crimes. He was acting as a money mule network for bank help desk fraud and massive cash withdrawals.
Wow.
And the court findings made it explicitly clear simply checking if a face in a video matches the face on an ID is no longer a sufficient indicator that the person is physically present and authentic.
Okay, but I mean, generating deepfakes, setting up virtual camera injections, writing scripts to rotate thousands of device profiles. This sounds like an incredibly high technical barrier to entry.
You think so, yeah.
Right. Like setting up a fully automated pipeline to open 47 accounts with deepfakes requires serious infrastructure. Why are criminals shifting to this highly complex method rather than just, you know, sticking to the old playbook of stealing physical phones or buying stolen IDs?
It really comes down to three driving forces outlined in the research: commoditization, economics, and evolutionary pressure.
Okay, let's break those down. Commoditization first.
Right. First, commoditization. The tools required to do this aren't hidden away on some dark web forum. They are widely available enterprise-grade development platforms.
Like Appium, which you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. Take Firebase, for example, which is a massive app development platform used globally. They have a security tool called AppCheck. While their official documentation explicitly provides debug tools for emulators, because, as we discussed, developers absolutely need to use them to do their jobs.
Which basically puts the banks in an impossible position.
Totally impossible.
Because they can't just write a blunt security rule that says, you know, block any connection that looks like an emulator.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that, they instantly block all the legitimate software engineers who are just trying to build and test their own apps.
Exactly. The legitimate footprint of these developer tools provides incredible camouflage. Criminals just hide in the noise of normal development traffic.
Wow. Okay, so what about the second force, economics?
Well, that leads directly into it. Traditional fraud involves physical labor and logistics. You have to hire people to steal mail, coordinate physical phone theft, or, you know, physically walk up to an ATM and withdraw cash.
Which obviously carries a huge risk of getting caught.
Exactly. It's expensive and risky.
So it's basically like a burglar who doesn't just have a master key, but has a machine that rapidly 3D prints 1,000 different keys a minute and tests them against 1,000 different locks simultaneously. You completely remove the physical logistics, travel time, and manual labor from your cost base.
That analogy hits the nail on the head. Because the marginal cost of running a script is virtually zero, fraudsters can just experiment at a massive scale.
They just let the bot do the work.
Right. They can test different device profiles, tweak their timing patterns, and refine their media injection methods thousands of times a day. They essentially crowdsource their own penetration testing until they find the exact path of least resistance through a specific bank's security architecture.
Which I guess naturally leads us to the third force you mentioned, evolutionary pressure.
Yes.
Because as the banks implement basic detection for these emulators, the attackers don't just give up. They evolve their tooling. And the text points to reporting from Group IB in 2026 regarding a shift toward something called cloud phones.
Oh, cloud phones represent a massive leap in sophistication.
How are they different from regular emulators?
Well, when banks started getting better at detecting the subtle digital signatures of basic emulators, like generic screen resolutions or missing cellular network data, the criminal ecosystem just adapted. Cloud phones are not just simple software simulations on a laptop.
Okay, what are they?
They are often actual physical mobile devices hosted in massive server racks in data centers, or they're highly obfuscated virtual machines that perfectly mimic real hardware at the kernel level.
Wait, really? So they are bypassing the fake hardware detection by essentially renting out racks of real hardware, but they're just accessing it remotely?
Yes.
And I imagine they are routing the connection through residential proxy networks so the IP address looks like it's coming from a suburban neighborhood instead of, you know, a giant data center.
Exactly, that mechanism. So the bank security system queries the device and it sees a real battery temperature, real screen resolution, and a genuine residential IP address.
So it looks completely normal.
Completely normal. Traditional static device fingerprinting, where you just check a list of known bad attributes, it becomes practically useless against that level of obfuscation. This raises an important question, though.
Which is?
If static blocking doesn't work and basic biometric checks can be injected with deepfakes, how do financial institutions actually defend your money against a fully automated, evolving burglary factory?
Well, looking at the regulatory guidance from the EBA and NIST, it makes it clear that the industry has to abandon the idea of a single silver bullet solution. They are heavily pushing for a multi-layered control stack.
Yes, layers are everything now.
Right. You have to verify the interaction across several dimensions simultaneously.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming this means they have to independently verify the hardware, the software environment, and the human being all at the same time.
That is the core philosophy of a resilient defense stack. The first critical layer is device attestation. And this is fundamentally different from just asking the phone, you know, are you real?
How so?
It involves cryptographic proof. So, for example, Google provides the Play Integrity API for Android.
Right.
Instead of just looking at the software, this API checks the hardware-backed key store deep inside the phone's architecture. It asks the physical hardware chip to cryptographically attest that it is a genuine, unrooted Android device running a certified version of the app.
Oh, wow. So it's talking directly to the metal.
Exactly. It makes it exponentially harder for a software emulator to lie about its hardware foundation.
But as we just discussed with cloud phones, if the attackers are using real phones in a server rack, they might actually pass that hardware check.
Sure.
So you need a second layer, which the report calls media provenance checks.
Yeah.
And this is the direct countermeasure to digital injection, right?
Yes. Media provenance shifts the focus from the visual image to the data surrounding the image.
Okay, what does that mean?
Instead of just passing a video of a face to an AI and asking, hey, does this look real? The system interrogates the sensor metadata. It looks for the minute physical artifacts that only a real camera lens and image sensor produce.
Fascinating.
Furthermore, it utilizes challenge response randomness.
Ah, okay. So instead of a predictable prompt like, you know, smile or blink, which a criminal could easily pre-record and inject, the app might ask me to track a randomly moving dot on the screen with my eyes. Or maybe flash a specific sequence of colors on the screen and check the reflection of my pupils.
Exactly. Something that has to be rendered and reacted to in real time, making those pre-recorded deepfakes completely useless.
Because you can't guess what the challenge will be.
Exactly. The complexity of faking that in real time is an enormous deterrent. But even then, we need the third layer, which is portfolio-level graph analysis. The Federal Reserve strongly advises institutions to adopt this.
So instead of looking at one single account application in isolation, they are stepping back to look at the entire network. Graph analysis must mean, like, drawing mathematical connections between disparate data points.
Right.
Mapping out IP addresses, device fingerprints, typing speeds, times of day, just plotting them all as nodes on a web.
That is precisely how it works under the hood. You might have a sophisticated cloud phone that passes the hardware attestation check.
Okay.
And you might even have an incredibly advanced real-time deepfake that somehow passes the media provenance check.
Right.
But when you apply graph analysis, you suddenly see that this exact same behavioral routing pattern or a specific cluster of seemingly unrelated IP addresses has been used to attempt 50 different account openings in the last hour.
Ah, I see. So even if the individual disguise is flawless, the pattern of their behavior across the broader network gives them away.
Yeah.
You stop looking at the individual tree and realize you're actually standing in a manufactured forest.
Exactly. You have to correlate the device integrity, the network path, the identity data, and the behavioral velocity all at once.
Right.
If any one node on that graph looks anomalous compared to the others, you flag the transaction.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting to me. We've talked about criminals weaponizing developer tools. And we've talked about banks building these massive multi-layered cryptographic defense stacks. But the FinCrime Intelligence report reveals an incredible irony at the heart of this arms race.
Oh, the defensive emulation.
Yes. The banks were actually using emulators themselves to fight back.
It is the ultimate expression of fighting fire with fire. I mean, the dual-use nature of emulators goes in both directions. Financial institutions utilize massive, legitimate emulator farms, platforms like AWS Device Farm, for their own operational resilience testing.
Sure. Just to make sure their app works for millions of people.
Exactly. They use them to ensure their app scales under pressure. But increasingly, they're using them to simulate the attackers.
Simulating the attacker.
Yeah.
Because I guess if you just train your fraud detection AI on the attacks that happened yesterday, you're going to get completely destroyed by the criminals who evolve their tactics today.
That is exactly the problem. There is a very sobering piece of research from a cybersecurity conference called RAID in 2020 mentioned in the text.
Oh, right. The evasion raid.
Yes. researchers conducted adversarial evasion attacks, meaning they specifically designed automated attacks meant to trick established banking fraud systems.
And what did they find?
They found that these newly adapted attacks achieved evasion rates ranging from 60% all the way up to 100%.
Wait, up to 100% evasion, meaning the established fraud systems completely failed to catch a newly adapted attack vector. They were totally blind to it.
Totally blind.
Yeah.
If you rely on historical data, adaptive human-guided automated attacks will bypass your defenses easily. The Financial Conduct Authority in the UK, the FCA, they released a comprehensive report in 2024 heavily advocating for the use of synthetic data in financial services.
Really?
They explicitly support generating synthetic transaction sequences and fake behavioral data to train machine learning models on threats that haven't even happened yet.
So essentially, the banks are having to build their own synthetic crime syndicates in a virtual sandbox. They spin up thousands of virtual emulators, script them to act like fraudsters, and just let them attack the bank's own AI over and over again just to see where the defensive walls break.
That is the new standard of defense. The text references academic frameworks like AMLCF-SIM.
What is that?
These use agent-based modeling to simulate complex cyber fraud and money laundering scenarios. They create what the academic literature calls a multiverse of multi-agent frameworks.
A multiverse.
Yeah. The bank generates massive data sets of fake adversarial laundering behaviors utilizing reinforcement learning. And then the bank's detection models learn and adapt in this virtual multiverse in real time.
Wow.
Yeah, they're effectively patching their vulnerabilities before the real criminals can even deploy those specific tactics in the wild.
A multiverse of synthetic money launderers constantly attacking a synthetic bank. That is wild. It's just this invisible, high-speed, automated arms race happening entirely in the cloud, all while I'm just sitting on my couch sipping coffee and trying to open a savings account.
It is a continuous living ecosystem of attack and defense, and it operates in milliseconds.
So what does this all mean? Like, for you, the listener, what is the ultimate takeaway from this absolute digital warfare happening just behind the glass of our phone screens?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it means the era of simple passwords and even simple passive biometric checks is completely dead.
It's over.
It's over. Fraud is no longer an isolated actor in a basement trying to guess your mother's maiden name or steal your physical wallet. It is a fully industrialized, automated supply chain. Financial institutions can no longer rely on single point security. Trust can no longer be blindly assumed just because a device looks real or a video feed displays a human face. Security has to be a living, breathing, adaptive ecosystem that cryptographically analyzes hardware integrity, media sensor data, and vast behavioral network graphs all simultaneously in real time.
The next time you open a banking app, seamlessly log in or verify your identity in 3 minutes without leaving your house, just take a second to appreciate the sheer scale of the invisible, simulated war happening in the background, just to mathematically prove that you are, in fact, a real human being holding a real phone.
It really is something to appreciate.
But, you know, it does leave me with one final, slightly unnerving thought, something that wasn't explicitly covered in the FinCrime intelligence research, but I don't know, it just feels like the inevitable next phase of this arms race.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if criminal emulators, data center cloud phones, and highly reactive AI-generated deepfakes continue to evolve at this rapid pace, will they eventually become so indistinguishable from physical reality that they beat the multi-layered cryptographic stack, too? Like, are we going to reach a technological breaking point where proving your digital identity remotely becomes mathematically and practically impossible?
That is a terrifying question.
Right. And if we do hit that wall, could the ultimate future of banking security actually force us to go backward? Like requiring us to put down our phones, physically walk into a brick-and-mortar bank branch, and shake a human being's hand again just to open an account. Something to think about the next time you smile for your phone camera. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.